I'm David Ellis, and I welcome you to this edition of Down to Brass Tacks for Friday, May the 22nd, 2020. Today, I am speaking to you remotely. I'm not within the studio, so I may sound a bit different because I'm coming to you via the telephone. My producer is Dennis Johnson, and as usual, you can call us at 434-1790. You can also send your WhatsApp messages to us, and I'm sure there's still a lot out there to talk about. You can look into the newspaper and you can identify the issues that you have your concerns about. Of course, this is not just about the things that worry you. It's also about the things that, you know, that have gone well and things that we can celebrate. I mean, for sure, at this stage, when you look around the world, and in particular, if you look at what's happening in this hemisphere, you will see that Barbados and other Caribbean countries have done remarkably well in fighting the COVID-19 pandemic. It is a real worry to see what's happening in a place like Brazil and several other countries. And we've had a lot of focus on the United States, but now they seem to be getting less of that kind of attention, even though they are not out of the woods by any stretch of the imagination. But as they seem to be easing off a bit in New York in particular, the situation elsewhere in this hemisphere is pretty worrying. And, you know, you have to take it seriously when you look at the fact that we have to have movement between ourselves and other countries. And therefore, if there is this upsurge in the hemisphere, then it naturally poses a threat and puts more pressure on even those countries that have done so well in the OECS and in the CARICOM region. So let's go straight to the telephone lines and take the first call of the day. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, sir.
Yes, welcome.
Welcome. Hi. First-time caller.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you.
Yes, I listened to the program, but I never called before until now. I had a little situation that was a bit worrisome for me, so I just wanted to bring it to the public's eye to see if someone could actually look into it.
What's it?
Seeing now that it's the, you know, the whole corona pandemic thing is going on and a lot of businesses are closed and so on and so forth, my mom is ill. She has respiratory problems. So basically, I take care of everything for her. My issue was that I've been to town to go to killer, but normally I would use one of the car parks that provided in the city to park. But as I said, all these car parks now are closed. So you have to now look for somewhere to park. So I happen to park directly in front of AP Jones to go inside to get the medication and stuff for my mom. When it came out, a warden was writing. Hello?
Yeah, I'm listening to you.
Yeah, a warden was writing a ticket. So I was like, excuse me, ma'am. You know, I explained the situation to her, and I told her that, you know, the car parks, so there's nowhere that you could really go to park. I explained to her, I understand she has her job to do, I understand all of that. But, you know, my thing is that if they could at least let the public know or direct the public in a way as to, you know, they would know what to do and where to go to go about lawfully parking, you know, because it's not like you're willfully going out there and break the law, but there's nowhere to go because the car parks are closed.
So yeah, I take the point. And, you know, in the effort to reopen business, this might have been one of the factors and one of the issues that might have been overlooked. Certainly, if you're reopening businesses, you're going to have to look at parking, especially in Bridgetown.
That's right.
So I think it is worth drawing it to the attention of those who have responsibility for this particular matter, because it can be grossly inconvenient if you are expected to do great business in Bridgetown and none of the car parks the public car parks are open.
Yep, and I was given a parking ticket for the matter, you know. So I tried to bring it to her attention and let her know, you know, well, the car parks are closed, so there's nowhere for you to go and park, you know. So I honestly believe that I am not the only person that was given tickets in the town area, because there's nowhere for you to go park because the car parks are closed. So that's basically just my point that I wanted to share.
Yeah, but tell me, I mean, a little bit more about the experience of having to look after your mother. How long have you been looking after her now?
She was diagnosed with COPD about 2 years ago.
Yeah. And what has that been like for you?
It has been very hard. Basically because, you know, you got to make sure that everything is clean, everything is tidy. You got to make sure no contaminants are wrong because, you know, as I said, it's a lung respiratory problem, you know, so you just got to make sure everything is tidy all the time. The hardest part is the oxygen itself, because she's on supplemental oxygen that she has to use every day. That is the hard part, because transporting the cylinders, those guys are really, really heavy. So that is one of the challenges there. But, you know, I'm young and I'm trying to do the best I can right now.
How has it changed your life?
Well, it makes you appreciate the little things that, you know, that you take for granted. You know, being able to wake up every day and draw a breath freely on your own, you know, not having to worry about anything. We take that for granted. It has changed my life drastically.
How do you deal with that on work?
Well, I basically have to pace myself, you know, put everything into perspective. You know, basically you make a plan for everything. You know, you wake up on the morning and you tell yourself, well, yes, I have XYZ to do. So you plan out your day. So, you know, if work starts at 4, you know, I got to make sure I get everything done by 3 to get ready to get to work for 4. So it's a task within itself.
Of course, all of this is happening too in the midst of this pandemic. Certainly extra precautions then have to be taken with your mother in this environment.
Yes, extra precautions have to be taken. You have to be aware of everything. You have to make sure you sanitize everything. You have to make sure you sanitize yourself frequently. Minimize contact with everything. You know, every hour you got to go and sanitize surfaces. You know, just make sure that you're not bringing any contaminants into the home from outside as well.
Well, I want to applaud your efforts in trying to assist your mother through this very difficult period. I certainly hope that the authorities will listen to the concern that has been raised about the public car parks and whether they could open a couple of them. They may not want to open all, but let's hear from them. And I really want to thank you very much for calling and being a caller today. Yes, welcome. This is down to Brass Tacks.
Morning, David.
Yes, good morning.
Yeah. David.
Hi.
I realize that things are getting tight and tighter every day. And you have to prepare yourself for the eventualities. Now, I am hearing that they're thinking in terms of cutting salaries and such like. And I therefore would like to look at some areas where you could more or less take up some of the slack without taxing or reducing the salaries of the people. Now, take for instance, you have to utilize what you have before you. You can recall we had a conversation pertaining to that sanitation building there, so in St. Thomas.
Yes.
You know that up to now, there are security guards that is still around that building. It is properly maintained from the external side that I can see. It means it got to be a cost attached to this building. Yet, it is empty. Now, when you're going through hard times, you utilize what you have before you, that you can eliminate what we say the high cost of survival for the government. You don't think it is time that something should be done with that building instead of just paying maintenance, paying security to keep the lands around it look very good, but unoccupied? What do you think about that?
Well, I think that whatever needs to be done to rectify what has been identified as the wrong that is present there, because I think they said there were some difficulties with the building.
Mm-hmm.
Something should be done as quickly as possible. But you see, when you're looking at something like that, you've got to look at, well, what's the overall cost of maintaining this building? Because, you know, we complain so much about the fact that the government has so many buildings that are maintained. And a new building like this certainly would require some measure of maintenance. So you have to look at the cost and the benefit associated with it. I agree with you that having pumped all of this money into it, it is sad that it is just lying there idle. But how much will that save? I don't know.
But you see, at the same time, we are paying money out, David. We are paying out money for rent for our buildings that the government offices occupy. And if it's good management, you should therefore try to eliminate all this overhead expenditure, because it's a hard time that the country going through and somebody got to pay for it. Now, that is enough on that. But I want to go, if I can ask you a question, this question, I know, David. Now, if I had to name a contractor or a businessman, businessman of the year, because the next couple of days will be 2 years the government in office. Who you would put down as the businessman of the year?
Of which year? With the year finished yet?
We
haven't even reached half of the year yet.
We celebrated the 2 years out in office.
You mean the businessman for the last 2 years?
Yeah.
You really put me on the spot there. I can't really identify anybody that I could say is the businessman for the last 2 years. Projects have been stalled in Barbados for the last 2 years.
But I will put Mark Maloney.
Well, you could go ahead and do what you want to do.
After a man that was being ready to come out to be in the forefront of the development and bringing back the economic situation better, I will got to put Mark Maloney as the man of the year. And when the Hotel Hyatt is...
Projects that he has actually worked on in the last 2 years that have come to fruition.
Well, he didn't work for the last 2 years, but the accusation that was laid against him is now being accepted. But that
Well, you're going to name him businessman of whatever the 2 year period only on the basis degree to which you believe the government has accepted him.
I would put it. I really should. I can make another suggestion.
Just trying to be mischievous, you know that.
Man, listen, could be. Well, I don't know where you mischievous. Listen, you always telling me that you're playing devil's advocate. Every time you're mischievous, let me stand there. You're the devil's advocate, and they're mischievous. Now, listen, I want to know if it was suitable that when the building is completed, why can't we? I hear Keith Weeks putting up for something for Mr. Motley's father and mother, because they produced the first female prime minister. I would like something to be done too for her. I would like that when the Hyatt building is completed, that she a monument should put. You know that, David?
Well, I can only listen to you on this particular point, because I can't join you in your mischief on that.
But this was a man that was very critical. He was the star of the platform of the BSB in 2018. I was very critical of.
I suppose one of the questions that the Prime Minister would have to answer is, how would you reconcile the kind of relationship that the government has with Mark Maloney today with the criticisms that were directed at him and the former administration when she was in opposition? I suppose it's a reasonable question to put.
Well, exactly. But David, I'm going to take more of your time. I want to be the listening role today.
All right, sir.
Have a nice weekend.
Down to brass tacks. It's 10:22. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, welcome.
Thank you. I just want the first caller to know that the car park on Bay Street at the back of Massey is open.
Okay.
Because I have parked there. So just in case he has to go to town again, that one is open.
And I believe they suggest to me that the private car park in Bridgetown is also open. Mm-hmm. Perhaps, is that a public car park, the one you're talking about, or is that private?
It's government.
It's government
public,
one.
Public, yeah.
Okay.
That's
all right.
One is open.
Yeah.
So, I assume he's still on the, you know, he's still listening, so he would hear about it.
All right. Thanks
okay,
very
bye-bye.
Much. Bye.
You're welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, welcome to Down to Brass Tacks.
Okay, I want to raise an issue with you.
Do you want to raise on CBC this morning?
Well, I better raise it with you too, because I mean, I was not planning to, but I think that I should raise this in the sense that it's very urgent. Having been involved from a family end, and I think that an answer should be given to it. And those that didn't listen this morning would listen now. And it's to do with this, because of COVID, they've introduced an online service for the inmates. As far as the top-ups are concerned, as far as the canteen is concerned, and they're concerned that...
At the prison?
At the prison, yeah. I think it's a good thing that they've done because families would not have been able to see them, but introducing this idea of the online service where families could go and put money on, and this money would then go to the inmate to make for his top-ups and also for is canteen facilities, but what has been fed back to me is that the deduction seems not fair. It's not equal, and they need to know where it is that is almost a 30-40% deduction from the amount put on. For example, if you put on $100, then the inmate is told that $100 was sent forward for him, but then eventually it boils down that you only end up with $52. So it's kind of concerned what's going on. I think this is a matter that they need to explain to the inmates or need to explain to the families what it is that massive percentage of deduction, that massive percentage of deduction is taken out. Because obviously these fellas or ladies depend on that couple of dollars that stands for them to buy the necessary facilities, whether it be the food or biscuits, whether it be the smokes, or whether maybe, but you can't tell some person that you put on $100 for them, and then when they go to check, that they only end up with $52. Some 40% of that money has been deducted. So I think the prison clerical department or the person responsible need to explain to the families of these inmates what percentage is being deducted.
And why?
And it's very frightening because these guys are becoming... They figure it's a good exercise, they figure, well, look, they're being cared for, that they can set up an online situation, that the families could go and put on something. And at the end of the day, they have money there to go and pay a slop chest, do top-ups, because they when they do top-up things, they laugh, because it seems that MAS got access to cell phones. But so much for that, and I hope the minister responsible or the superintendent or the accounts department at Dodds will explain what's going on so that people do realize that there's some honesty going on and nothing that is questionable. That is what you wanted to hear me with, right?
Okay, thank you very much.
Right.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, morning, ma'am.
Good morning, sir. The first caller that called in, he said, when he was interviewing him, he said his mom has COPD. Could you explain the initials of COPD for me?
Well, I have to check on it. I know it is something that is referred to quite a lot. And I will just check here for you.
Maybe we'll put down a list on then.
Yes, I will get back to you on
that. I just want to know what sort of a thing is that, you know, because I know certain health things, but I'm not familiar with COPD, so I'll be glad if you can tell me. Thanks.
I've heard a fair amount of reference to COPD online, especially on television, where certain products are being promoted, but I will check it for you and share the information with you. It is called what? Chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. It's a type of obstructive lung disease which is characterized by long-term breathing problems and poor airflow. The main symptoms include shortness of breath and cough with sputum production. COPD is said to be a progressive disease, meaning that it typically worsens over time. All right. Other names include chronic obstructive lung disease. That's another one. So that, in a nutshell, is what it's about. All right. Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, welcome.
Okay. No, I was just calling to tell you what COPD stands for.
We've just done it, so thank you very much.
You found it. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Bye.
Yeah. It's 10:28. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks. I noticed that the Sandy Lane Trust has responded to some of the concerns which have been raised on this program and elsewhere about the distribution of the funds for the needy. And I don't think in what they have done, what I've seen as the response, there has been no reference really to the concern about the politicization of this particular matter. I know that there are other people who have their views, and everyone is entitled to their own perspective on these matters. But I still think that there is a lot of merit in holding the view that perhaps the government needed to look for a different way of dealing with this. You know, even when politicians do things the right way, they still get criticized for doing them the wrong way. And I feel it opens the politicians and the people who are sitting in Parliament to a criticism that in many instances they may not deserve. So it is trying to look for, you've got to look for some mechanism that is speedy, because I appreciate that sometimes one of the difficulties we face with going through the government bureaucracy is that it sometimes takes too long to get things to people. But this approach, I swear, is fraught with danger for those who are at the center of it. And, you know, you do your best to try to minimize that kind of situation. But that's my view. Down to brass tacks. Hello? Welcome to the program. 434-1790, that's the number for you to call. I also note that the Queen Elizabeth Hospital had a news conference yesterday. I thought that what I've seen published is basically a repeat of some of the things that were said on Down to Brass Tacks last week, last Tuesday in particular. I have noted that there has been an emphasis on a suggestion that people are making a claim that the surgeries in the Queen Elizabeth Hospital are not in the best of shape. I don't know where that has come from, because the discussion that has been going on here has not been focused on that at all. The discussion was focused on one particular surgery which has been created. So if there are those of you out there who have developed a notion that there is something wrong with the surgeries in the Queen Elizabeth Hospital in general, I think there is no foundation for that whatsoever. That has not been said publicly coming out of the discussions that we have had here. 4341790. Hello.
Hi, good morning.
Yes, good morning. Yes.
Hi, good morning. Mr. Ellis?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, yes, I would just congratulate you for your journalistic prowess. The very first call you had on this morning, in that you didn't let him get away when you spoke about the ticket that he would have gotten from the officers at the MTW.
Yeah.
But you went on to then question him about the concerns about parking, and he went on to explain why he had to park there and went into his own talk about his mom. And I like that part of it because, you know, it shows your journalistic efforts, and it brought out to me why I had to call this program, because, you know, very often we hear about the children of parents who would stand by to all they want to get from them is their pensions and their money and their property. But we never hear much about the persons who actually assist the parents when they're ailing and when they're aging as well. And I thought that was commendable of the young guy who is the Knapp's mother with the COPD. You know, we don't give enough credence to persons like those because, well, sometimes they don't come forward and say these things, yeah? But I want to commend the guy and also for being, you know, standing out to look after his mom. And it isn't easy when you're looking after an ailing parent and having to do the things that he just spoke about, moving to and fro and, you know, trying to assist her in this part of the vineyard, you know. So I just want to commend you for that. And also, I want to look also at the hospital itself. You know, the hospital get a lot of licks for a lot of things that they don't do well, but I want to give kudos to a lot of the nurses and the medical staff at hospital. I myself am a recipient of some good medical service that I had from them. And this week, 5 years ago, I was a patient at the hospital, having gone through major surgery there. God bless me, I came out unscathing.
Yes.
And, you know, I stayed in the hospital for 17 days, having gone in there to have a procedure done that would have taken just maybe less than 2 hours. And went into a cardiac arrest and spent some time in there, ICU, you know, what we would normally call count out, for a couple of days. So I'm a recipient of great service from the surgeons there and the nurses, because 5 years hence, I'm about and moving through with my life and giving God thanks. And it's 5 years ago that I went through that. So I want to say kudos to all the surgeons and who looked after me while I was there, get me back on my feet. And I remember one of the surgeons talking to me, and he said, listen, you know, the doctors, he actually told me that, you know, you went through this thing so good. The three things that happened to you, the Lord was not ready to take you away from us yet. He said, and secondly, you're a fit guy, very fit guy. And thirdly, you know, you went through this whole episode with a very good attitude. And those three things resonate with me fully. You know, and they stand with me till today, because I understand, you know, having to have gone through those days in hospital and recovery and coming out unscathing, you know. So I just want to give thanks to the surgeons, the nurses, the hospital, all those people who took care of me while I was there, you know. to get me.
How has your life changed in the last 5 years or so?
Well, I see things totally differently. Well, not that I was almost always an optimist, but having gone through what happened to me, it has put me into a different realm where I become more cool about life, more energetic, more compassionate, more energized, more giving, and, you know, reaching out.
Less focused on the negative.
Exactly, exactly. The negative is always going to pull you back, right? But the positive, when you begin to aspire towards great things in life and begin to put your mind on higher hopes and look at the force before you, which is more powerful that you can hold on to and guide you through life, you feel energized, you feel, you know, in a different realm from the average person who nitty-grit and complain and commiserate about everything. You know, they see nothing. It seems as though people see nothing positive and beautiful. I know we're going through some very turbulent times now with the COVID-19. But I guess some people are still going to live, and some people are going to, well, some people will be dragged down. But in everything, we have to give and try to extract some positives and some measure of happiness from things that we live around. So that's how I use my life now. I exude a measure of confidence and compassion. I speak to a lot of people. I still do a lot of things that people get hope from. I try to put hope within people's life and let them look to this higher source and let them believe, hey, you know, something is better further on. We may be scrambling and struggling now, but if you can associate with somebody who can teach you something, somebody who you can grab along to and get some positive and some energies from, you know, those things are necessary for life today, because those things are going to help us and take people along with you. You know, so that's how I live my life today.
Thank you so much for those encouraging words.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much as well.
This is Down to Brass Tacks at 10:39. Hello. Welcome to the program.
All right. There are three things that I wanted to talk about. Let me go with the least important one first. There by Fair Pilgrim, there's a development that they're cutting the road for, where to put a roundabout. You're familiar with that area?
Yes, I think there's been a lot of criticism of that particular road, that development there, and the way that the road has been cut. Is that what you're referring to, going towards Coral Ridge?
Correct, exactly. Why, you know, sometimes I wonder in this place, that Barbados is a real place. You have a straight road, right? Now, you're building development. You're saying to me that what you're going to do is that you're going to put a roundabout there so that people come from the development don't have to stop left and right, that they will just have give way onto the main road. I mean, that don't make no sense. How could some person, I don't know which department it is in government that's responsible for that, but obviously some person very high up would have had to approve that. And it is very inconvenient. The only person that is convenient for is the people who are going to be living in that development. I don't understand it. And I would like for some person from that ministry, whichever ministry it is, to come and explain to the public, because the public is at a disadvantage with this thing, why this day was decided on. So that is the first point. So if someone for that ministry, and I don't want it to just be ignored, because I will call back again about it. Right?
It
should be explained. You know, the logic behind it. These people are paid a big set of money, which is the next topic I'm going to come to, right? But when you have people with great responsibility who are paid to do a sensible job, they should be made to account for the actions, I guess, right? That's one. Let me segue into the next point with regard to salaries. And you might disagree with this. I am not too sure. But I believe that it is time. We know the minimum wage, right? We know what a laborer gets. We know what the average cashier gets. Why it is that we don't know what the people at the top end get? Like, take, for example, the Minister of Tourism, the Minister of Transport and Work. Why it is that we don't know what their salary is?
That's not a secret, though. I mean, that information is is quite public. You just got to go and search for it. But, you know, every time that there is an increase, there is information in the estimates and that sort of thing. You can find that easily.
So
that's
that's something I because we had a little discussion on a WhatsApp group about it, and a good set of people don't have idea. And since it's
that's because they might not have paid attention to it when.
As a journalist, you have an idea of what the
you can search for it and find out.
Yeah,
but it is not a secret. It is not hidden.
Okay. All right. It is not hidden. But off the top of your head, do you have an idea? Like, gets 15,000 a month, 20,000?
Well, let me check specifically the information, the emoluments for MPs and for ministers of government. It varies depending on whether you're a minister, whether you're a backbencher, the Speaker of Parliament. The Deputy Speaker of Parliament, the Prime Minister. I mean, all of that is, you know, the schedule is there.
Here's the reality of it is right now, obviously, the tourism industry isn't really doing that much, right? And where people have to be laid off and take salary cuts via one way or another, you know, it would be interesting because I think it's in Bermuda, the parliamentarians there were... I think they are offered, or I don't know if it was voluntary or not, but they have a pay cut. And I'm like thinking, how come that isn't happening here?
Okay. You know, why do you think it important to have it happen here? Why is it important for you?
Well, we are all in this together, yeah? And the whole togetherness would mean that since it is that the department there is responsible for tourism, not much isn't going on right now. That means that the workload is much less. So why you get the full salary?
I'm not so sure that you can argue. I'm not here to dispute.
No, I understand. You present.
Here to dispute your argument that the government has to set an example and that sort of thing. What I'm saying to you is that in a time like this, do not come to the conclusion that because the tourism industry is not as vibrant as it was before and the bottom seems to have fallen out of it.
Right.
This makes life easier for those who are the planners. The people who are planning have a harder job right now because they have to spend a lot more time thinking of how they will revive it. And they got to be involved in a lot of Zoom meetings and that sort of thing with the whole objective of trying to revive the industry. So don't think that they can't be twiddling their thumbs and sitting down going, you know, staying at home doing nothing because tourists aren't coming to Barbados. They have a responsibility now.
But you would agree that their responsibility is much less now, though. I mean, it isn't
how
it was.
How? Year. Explain to me how.
For one, you know, there's no travel. So which means if there's no travel, that means that even if you are trying to get people to come because of the restrictions of each country trying to control the spread of the coronavirus, that means that even if guests want to come, they can't come because of the restrictions.
All right, just hold on a minute. You're measuring work in the tourism sector by whether visitors are coming or not.
Well,
when visitors are coming, life is easier. When visitors are not coming, you have to be looking more seriously at your strategy and your approach. You have to be involved in a lot of conversations with people at home and abroad. You know, you have sleepless nights because the situation is as bad as it is. I don't see how...
I am buying to that one, but I get where you're going with it, right? So that's okay.
All right.
The last point I wanted to make is with regard to what I heard on the news last night that the Queen Elizabeth Hospital is planning on buying a mobile operation theater.
So they said that last week on the radio here.
Right. Now, the little bit I heard with Dr. Waldron, and I can't remember the other guy's name, Dr. Waldron was saying that the size of the operating theater they have in St. Lucie is under what international standard is, which is what we...
No. There is no operating theater in St. Lucie. He was talking about what obtains at Enmore.
Enmore, sorry. Yes, you're correct, at Enmore. Correct. Right. So he's saying that the present one there is a 10 by 10, And really and truly, it should be like a 15 by 15 sort of ending the corridor size so that the journey be able to get through and that sort of thing. So I'm wondering, why not, since it is that we could actually physically build that structure and it be at a permanent location, why? Because I do believe that importing the operating theater is not going to be a cheap thing. It is going to be something that's pretty costly. And the work that would be done on it would be something that would be done overseas. With unemployment so high, and I do believe that we will have the expertise here to build such a operating theater. Why we didn't go the route of having it, you know, either build a new one or expanding the one that is there?
Well, they're the ones who can answer that question. I certainly
I would really, because you see, the thing is, and you know, one thing is that I realized, and the hospital was very quick to make it known that things like this should not be discussed in the public, right? Now, I don't know who the board for the QH answers to, but decisions like this, you know, it highlights the fact that people do things in some cases for their own interests. And that's just a simple example of something that seems obvious to the average person out there, right? I don't understand. When I heard that was their plan, I was like wondering why you would want to buy you know, because at the end of the day, it is still the taxpayers that got to pay for it, all right? It is not a private operation. It's very much something that the taxpayers have to account for. And these are the decisions. I do believe that there should be some sort of way where the public is brought up to speed.
I'm gonna say to you that over the years, we have had a situation here where if anything goes seriously wrong with any one of us, it is to the Queen Elizabeth Hospital and its ICU that you had to turn.
Correct.
There was no other facility in Barbados up to that standard.
Right.
This situation with COVID has also highlighted the fact that ideally the country needs some measure of redundancy in this regard.
Yes.
It has gone in the direction of creating or trying to create a facility for surgery for COVID patients, even though, if you look at what was said in the newspaper, it's been repeated again, Dr. Cave, it is for the rare possibility and for, according to what I saw in the newspaper today, extraordinary surgery. That's the language that has been used. And therefore, we have to concede that at some point, something can go wrong to the point where somebody in that, a COVID patient, will need surgery.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because of that, they had a special kind of surgery created where they talk about this term negative pressure versus positive
right.
pressure.
I wanted to spread in the air. Yeah, I get that. So, yeah.
But having said that, for other patients, non-COVID patients,
mm-hmm.
I don't see anything wrong with trying to improve the capacity of the country to respond. Anything can happen to us.
Yes,
as a country. We could have any kind of accident and stuff in the country. So having one, if you are going to improve the capacity to respond by way of having the mobile surgery and that sort of thing, I don't see anything wrong with that. You know, my only criticism that I share the concern which has been raised based upon the admissions which have been made by the Queen Elizabeth Hospital spokespeople, that if you're going to create a separate theater, then you've got to make sure that it's up to standard and that even the minor things that they talk about can actually be done in a reasonable time. And that is something that I suppose people will hear a little bit more about at another time. But, you know, you've got to be able to do those things within a reasonable time. And if you can't get the minor things sorted out in a place like that, then what will happen when you get these extraordinary events? So The reading between the lines, that is what is there for us to discuss, you know. But I cannot join you in saying that if they're going to get a mobile surgery, that something is wrong with that. We need, you know, all the redundancy that we can get.
Fine, but what I'm saying is the cheaper alternative would be to expand the one that you have there to build one, as opposed to importing a mobile theater. That's just my point.
Well, they have several theaters at the hospital, you know. Don't forget that. They have several of them already.
I agree. Have them at the QEH, but I'm saying outside
of the QEH. There are, you know, there are surgeries at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital. The issue arose over a special surgery for COVID patients.
Correct.
That is what the issue and about.
And the whole idea is to have something away from the QEH, right? And their solution was to get a mobile theater. All I'm simply saying is they want at the Enmore facility, that there could be modified.
You know, it is all well and good to talk, you know, but, you know, there's more to this issue than just having a facility away. For instance, who mans the facility? Would the same people who man the facility be the ones who go back and forth between, you know, institutions and that sort of thing? I mean, these are some of the questions that remain. So, I mean, we are 100% behind the concept of trying to be COVID-free and to do the best that we can. And remember, people who raise questions here are not necessarily raising questions because they just want to be difficult. It is that at the end of it all, we are all served by this institution. And any one of us, I mean, you saw that story that came out the other day, this week, where the ambassador to the United Nations comes home and tests positive for COVID. I mean, anybody at all can find itself in a situation where they need urgent and important medical attention. So it is working as a country. You know, some people want a situation where everybody sits down and agrees with whatever is being done. And we must all sit here and say, okay, it's perfect. Everything is perfect. Everything is working well. Well, like any other country, we got things that work well, and they got things that need to be improved.
Yeah, I agree. All right, my last point is with regard to tourism again, but looking at it from a different point of view. Like most of our, well, I was looking at the U.S., and right now, when you see what's going on in the U.S., basically the hotspot for the coronavirus, I don't think that it would be in our best interest to really target the U.S. for tourists at this point in time, anytime soon.
Now, who are you going to target? If you go to Britain, you got the same issue?
Okay, I come into that. I remember it was last year our prime minister went to Ghana, right? And part of the whole discussion there was something that was pretty obvious, that in order for like somebody from the Caribbean region, if they want to get to anywhere in Africa, they got to go through Europe, right? That we should really and truly have a direct link between, let me just put it bluntly, a direct flight from, say, Ghana to either Barbados or Trinidad, right? And I'm thinking that with all the negative images and press that we get out of, that has been given to us, depicting Africa as a place that's not very developed and that sort of thing, I am saying that they have wealthy people that could travel for vacation just like the tourists do from the U.S., from Africa. 52 countries are in Africa, and certainly, you know, we could target those countries in terms of tourism. I mean, I guess it has to start with first having a direct flight from one of the countries in Africa.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your suggestions. We got to leave you now. Thank you.
Yeah. All right.
Down to Brastack. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, David.
Yes, ma'am. Good morning.
To respond, I'm looking for it. I had the information. The guy was asking about as it relates to salaries, and this is up to 9th August 2018. I think the public workers increase came before that, so this might or might not have the 5%, I think, increase they gave them, or whatever the amount is. Before I give that figure, though, let me say I agree with him on a number of points. As it relates to the mobile theater, I believe Dr. Waldron, when he was on, made reference to the Lions Eye Center, and he also said that down at Harrison Point, there is no operating theater. I was very complimentary of the government for that building at Harrison's, but I was surprised to find out that they built that building without an operating theater. And he spoke about inadequate lighting system, etc. But be that as it may, I believe that the Lions Eye Center right next to QEH is part of the building, and it is right there that they can assess the other ancillary services that they may need. And therefore, all instead of using that money to import this mobile theater, they can just retrofit that building. And I think they might have enough space for a couple wards there, you know, bed space, etc. I think that would be a better idea. But as per usual, we are only told what they're going to do. I don't know how citizens, if there will be down the road somewhere citizens can have input in government spending and you know, what government policy is, because it seems as though you vote and after that, no input. The other thing, the argument you're using as it relates to ministers going to be busier.
I didn't say all ministers.
Just tourism?
Specifically about the tourism ministry where this guy was focused on. I ain't speaking about all of them at all.
Okay. Well, I'm not one of those that will be asking for the Minister of Tourism to be removed. I think it's a vital ministry, so I'm not part of that. But I don't know if the extra work, because to me you have BTI, you have all the other agencies that work alongside, you have persons overseas. So I don't know where this extraordinary amount of work would come. But be that as it may, these are the salary rent, the total amounts. And I'm going to the reason why this is important is that this is why I'm saying that it cannot just be a pay cut. Because when you look at the salary and then you look at what accompanies the salary, which is the permanent secretary, administrative assistant, personal secretary, private, whatever assistant, messenger, maid, that goes with that, the letterheads and all the stuff that goes with a creation of a new ministry, it is just not the minister's salary. And I also want persons listening to the numbers I'm going to give to note that when you remove a minister, a particular ministry, it does not mean the person is going home without pay. It means he earns the salary that he would get as a member of parliament, and that is critical. So the prime minister's salary, $268,172, that is broken down into $213,334 salary, $54,838 entertainment. Then you have, I'm not going to quote the Deputy Prime Minister because there's no person there at this time. The Minister's salary, $160,000 approximately. Entertainment, $24,170. And the travel is $23,777. Brings it down to $207,949. So roughly $208,000 annually. The Parliamentary Secretary, I think there are about two of those or three, $155,322. And 59 cents. Entertainment, $15,671. Travel, $15,845. Brings it to $186,838 for the parliamentary secretary. The president of the Senate is $82,446. Duty allowance, $22,182. Deputy president, on and on. So, but the MP salary would be, well, you have chairman of committees, $101,622.91, entertainment, $13,202.40, and the duty allowance, $14,708.28. There's the deputy speaker salary.
Are you sharing all of this to say what?
The MP salary, the guy, you said you didn't have the information, didn't you? So I'm giving the public the information and the guy who called.
Well, I told you the guy, naturally the information is easily available. He said that the information is secret. He gave the impression that it was hidden. It is not hidden, and you're proving the point. It is easily available.
But didn't he ask you for it, and you said you didn't have it at hand?
Yeah, why we got to go through all these details?
So the MP salary is $63,040.82. The entertainment, $13,202. And the duty allowance, $14,708. So outside of a minister's salary, the MP will get $90,951. All I'm saying to Barbados is this is the salary as of the 9th of August 2018. I believe that it is clear that we cannot afford to carry all of those ministers. And in addition to a cut in salaries for ministers, you have to have a removal of the ministers. Finally, in the interest of transparency, and I could give a quote from the Prime Minister during the election, she said, I'm trying to look for the exact quote, but I'm looking for it, but I don't have it here. But she talked about transparency, and she said some of the things she would look at is communicating with the Barbadian people, bringing a level of transparency in government that will surpass past governments, and making government operations accountable. The final point I want to say is this, huh? The salary, as you stated, can be found. What cannot be found is the salary for these consultants. Many, many, many consultants, large number lodged within the Prime Minister's office, and every other ministry's their consultants. In the interest of transparency and accountability, the public needs to know what are the salaries of this consultant. The latest one is the Czar. We know nothing. We don't know where to turn. There's no press conference that you could ask questions. At the press conference, the Prime Minister talks for 2 and 3 hours, but at the end of the day, everything is thrown together and people head confused with all this. And the journalists not asking her, I don't know if they're scared, they're not asking her the right questions. What are the salaries of the consultants? And they also, the majority of them need to go. All these advisors to the Prime Minister, I have the list of them. And I got the list from reading in the papers. And I'm saying to you, we are at crunch time. And I want to see all this accountability and transparency that the Prime Minister promised, how it's going to work out. And I'm saying to the union, you should not just be accepting any salary cut. You should be accepting a large number of those ministries being removed because they're redundant. It's a doubling up of things. Home Affairs and Attorney General, Emma, first time in the history that has been separated.
Okay, well, you've made your observation and your point. Okay, thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. Hello? Of course, people who have alternative views are free to share those views, okay?